Everyone, and welcome to the Grant Street Experience. I am your host, Grant Irvin, Chief Resilience Officer for the City of Pittsburgh. And this is our experimental podcast about all of the great and cool and interesting things that are happening along Grant Street. I'm here with my co-host, Rebecca Kiernan, as well as a friend of the show and production magician, David Finer, who is our guest today on the Grant Street Experience. David, welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Yes. Rebecca, how are you?
Hey, Grant. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. It's a, David, you have a great choice in color today. I want to thank you for that.
Nobody told me it was green shirt day.
You just feel it, Rebecca. I just think it just happens, you know, that's all. You wake up and you're like, it's a green day.
It is.
Missed it. Missed the memo.
We'll get you on the memo list when we get back to work here. David, you know, a lot to talk about in these days and times, and I'm real interested to hear your opinion on a bunch of stuff. But one of the things that I wanted to just start with is the transition that we have been under during this time of COVID-19 and moving to virtual platforms and what that means for both kind of the cable team and kind of the media work that you guys do. But maybe just before we get into that, just start off and tell folks a little bit about kind of your role within the city and kind of the magic that you guys create with cameras and production up in the Fred Rogers studio.
Okay, so that's a lot right off the top. Nice, thank you.
We don't throw any softballs here at the Grant Street Experience, David. You know that.
For those that don't know, my name is David Finer. I'm the Communication Technology Manager in the City of Pittsburgh's Department of Innovation and Performance. We are the government access television channel, Comcast 13, Verizon 44. You can also watch us on a live stream through the city clerk's office. We also have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/citychannelpittsburgh. And for 37 and a half years, we were television based. From 1982 until 3 or 4 months ago, we were the channel where you would tune in and watch gavel to gavel coverage of city council meetings, mayor's press conferences, budget forums, informational programs, interview shows like this. And March rolled around, and we suddenly had to completely change our focus. How do we remain relevant and continue to keep the business of the city of Pittsburgh televised? So our department director gave me this project, figure it out. And not only figure it out, but there is very little time. The city needs to continue its business. Mm-hmm. So if you think back to the beginning of March, I know it's only 3 months ago, and some people might think that's a lifetime ago, but there was a lot of confusion. A lot of people were unsure, is this going to be a week or 2 weeks or a year or 2 years? We needed to make sure that the city council specifically was able to meet without any interruption. And my staff and I spent a lot of time researching and looking into a lot of different options. Mm-hmm. And to their credit, Alex, Bill, and Joy used every platform you can think of. WebEx, FaceTime, Google Duo, Zoom, Microsoft Teams, and they researched all of these various options so that the city council could continue meeting. In a very short period of time, we came up with Zoom, and we have been using it since, and it's been, I'll be honest, and I don't say this lightly, but I didn't know anything about internet broadcasting 3.5 months ago. I am not an expert. I don't claim to be an expert, but We have learned a whole lot in 3.5 months. And I'd like to say that we have a very small part in allowing the city of Pittsburgh to continue doing its business.
Yeah, it's been an awesome transition. And I think the rate and speed that you guys, you know, worked with is definitely to be commendable. I mean, what are some of the differences, I guess, you know, from a production standpoint or just going from that, you know, in place kind of environment now to the virtual environment?
Well, we are learning just how digitally adept people are at this point. So everybody understands how an iPhone works enough that they can click on their apps and take pictures and talk on the telephone. But now that people are in their homes and using their home internet speed, we're learning how to diagnose from afar and help out from afar. Mm. When we were doing city council meetings or shoots in our TV studio before, if a microphone died, we knew exactly where to go and how to fix it and how to take care of it. Whereas now, if somebody mutes themselves inadvertently and doesn't know how to unmute themselves, it can be challenging to get that information to them to unmute themselves or how to do it. So we're doing a completely different job. And not only that, but if people have been watching our channel for the last 3 months, Zoom is audio based. So whoever makes a sound most recently, that's who's going to appear on camera. So if I clear my throat, if my dog barks behind me, my face pops up, whether I want it to or not. And there's nothing the production staff can do to fix that. So not only are we seeing the insides of these people's homes, nice background, by the way, Grant.
Thank you.
Not only are we seeing the backgrounds of everybody's homes, but their home life. Children, animals, noises. So it's interesting to see things from that perspective as well.
What's the weirdest thing you've seen?
How much time do you have?
number one.
I mean, we have seen people appear on camera holding pets and doing kissy faces. We have seen, the other thing that's interesting is, I don't have it here, but some people leave their cell phones right in front of their computer or even on their keyboard. So when a cell phone vibrates, their picture appears in a meeting and it's usually them staring straight down, completely not paying attention to what's happening. So in our previous lives, we have 4 robotic cameras in council chambers, and whoever is talking, we try to cut between the cameras to get to that person as quickly as possible, so it's only that person, and we stay on that person until they're done talking. You both have been to council meetings, so you know how this goes on, and you've both been in the control room also. But here, we don't have that kind of control anymore. I tell them, my staff and I, we all tell them very regularly, please mute and silence your cell phone. I've been working for the city for 7 years now, and some of the ringtones that have come up during council meetings over the years are interesting, and now we're seeing how unprepared people are to be seen in front of the camera. Did I say that correctly?
Do you have a favorite, Rebecca? I mean, we're, you know, the Zoom platform or just the digital meeting space, I've been kind of amazed at how quickly it's been adopted and adapted to kind of the work that we see. Like it's been a rapid transition. I mean, do you have any thoughts and kind of things that you see through the meetings that you're on every day, or favorite backgrounds?
I mean, there's been some good backgrounds. It's interesting to see what people's houses look like. Yesterday, I forget whose house it was, but they had nice molding in the back that I was, like, commenting on. It's like you have a better icebreaker in the beginning because everybody comments on something weird that's going on in the other person's frame. But right. I'm kind of struck by how many meetings we could have made a little bit more efficient by just using one of these platforms.
You mean prior to kind of the COVID?
Yeah, there's a lot of travel reduction that I think could happen. And I mean, telecommuting too is clearly more feasible for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think what's going to happen also is not just the city of Pittsburgh, but companies across the country are going to find out just how much they were spending in travel and lodging. And now instead of a flight across the country, a 3-hour meeting and another flight across the country, you can just be there for do this and be in a 3-hour meeting.
That's right.
And be just as effective in some cases.
Absolutely. And actually be more effective because now you're not taking 2 6-hour flights across the country to get to that meeting. You can actually be working during those times, I guess.
And I mean, much more efficient.
Yes.
That's a big carbon reduction.
Yes.
I mean, just from both of your takes, I mean, maybe David first, I mean, what do you think this means, or what are some of the implications, just your gut reactions in terms of the transition of the media environment and new digital tools like this? Like, how is it going to kind of change us both in maybe the near term and in the long term?
Well, I think what we may not have seen it immediately 10 years ago, 10 and a half years ago, but what we're learning is that people who have information can share it out to the world without the media, without the traditional form of newspaper, television, and radio. So 10 and a half years ago, this little tool came along called Twitter, and it's this unfiltered communication tool. Whether you're someone famous or someone not famous, you can share your message. You don't need the media. So in that respect, what this Zoom tool has allowed is anyone, really, if you don't know how to use your iPhone or your Android or whatever kind of phone you have, most people at this point understand what Zoom is.
Mm-hmm.
And can get on Zoom, be live on YouTube, be live on Facebook, and get out a message with 1 or 1,000 people and share it without having a middleman, the media, slanting it or presenting a biased view of it.
That's interesting.
As far as participation goes, are you seeing any changes in who's attending council meetings?
It was interesting at the beginning because my staff and I, we were having all kinds of regular internal discussions. How do we do public comment?
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't find a way for the public to come into this. So again, think back to 3 months ago, Zoom exploded. So there was this exponential growth in a very short period of time. And a lot of the articles that were coming out were saying things about how Zoom was being hacked. So again, we did more research and we found ways to make sure our meetings weren't hacked. And we've done a really good job at it. None of our meetings up to this point have been hacked, none of them, because we've been following all of the guidelines to make sure that doesn't happen. But there was still the question of how do we invite the public in? So what we came up with is not perfect, but it works. So if somebody wants to give public comment at a city council meeting, they have to call the city clerk's office to sign up. They give their name, email address, and telephone number. And at that point, the Zoom meeting credentials are given to them. We set up a Zoom waiting room. So it's not like anybody who has the information just can jump into the meeting and do whatever they want. So me and my staff were sitting waiting for the meeting to start. We have the Zoom waiting room off to the side. And we can say to the members of council, does anybody know Rebecca Kiernan? And somebody will say, oh, yeah, she's on Grant Urban's staff. Okay, perfect. Let's bring her in. Does anybody know the phone number? The other option is people can call in. As long as they have the meeting ID and the password, they pick up a telephone, they call a phone number, and they can also get into the meeting. So we'll say, does anybody know 412-555-1212? And if nobody knows the number or the name, we don't let them into the meeting. Hmm.
So have you seen participation increase versus the, you know, the in-person meetings of the past?
I think it's about the same, but it is definitely different, because whereas in the past public comment was sometimes the same 4 or 5 people,
right,
at a council meeting, every council meeting, now there's a different crowd, and it's a technologically adept crowd. They are aware of how technology is used. They know how to use it. Whereas they may not have been able to come down for a, they may not be able to get on a bus and take a bus downtown for a 1:30 council meeting. They can, just like flying back and forth across the country for a meeting, they can sit in their house for 15 minutes, jump on Zoom, say what they need to say, log off, and be done for the day.
Yeah.
So I think I don't think it's more or less. I think it's just a different crowd.
Just a different crowd. Does that start to, I mean, it starts to definitely give people more choices, right? I mean,
yeah,
in terms of the ways in which they can access city government, you know, does that then, you know, are these things around to stay?
It's another option. I think, so we were the first one, the City Channel was the first one to buy a Zoom Pro license. It's an annual cost. I think in the back of my mind, I knew this was going to be at least the summer. So why not, instead of going month to month, let's just buy the annual. And then if all of this stuff ends, at least we have an option. We have another option we can use. For example, let's say let's say in September, October, November, we're back to work. Everybody's back in the building and you want to record a show, but your guest is not able to get there for whatever reason that day. We can jump on Zoom and do it this way.
Yeah.
I just think it is here to stay, but it is definitely another option that we can use for our own purposes.
You kind of touched on this a little bit, but I mean, the issues of technological literacy are really coming front and center in the crisis. I mean, what are some of the ways in which we could help bridge those divides amongst, like you said, you know, the person that might be able to be in their office and access a public comment versus those that have typically done it in person? What are some ideas maybe in which we can start to share and bridge those divides?
I think the first thing has to do with the concept of the computer. I know it's hard to believe in the year 2020, but not everyone has a personal computer. Mm-hmm. So, and not everybody has a smartphone. Until he passed away last year, my dad was still toting around a flip phone. I mean, he was 78 years old and he had a flip phone. So he would not have been able to do this. So that's the first thing, is we've been talking for a number of years about bridging the digital divide. That is, I think that would have to be the first. From that point, I think there's a way that maybe the City Channel, me and my staff, can be utilized, maybe in a how-to video. We've been making how-to guides, PDFs for Zoom for people in the city who are logging on for the first time. But maybe a how-to video, looking at a computer, looking at a keyboard, how to get into a Zoom meeting. What is this icon? Why does it look like a camera? I mean, Joy on my staff, she wrote one of the how-to guides, and she said, "I wrote it for my mother," because knowing who the audience could be was really important in making sure that everybody could understand how to read those how-to guides.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting time that we're at. I mean, we've seen that. So it's both devices, you know, the hardware, but also kind of, you know, how do you manage the software, right? Like just having the device isn't good enough. You need to be able to be adept at using it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, maybe it's a little quick transition. I mean, same thing with this. Interested, you're a student of the media. I mean, what are some of the things that that you're seeing in the broader space or different, you know, books, movies, podcasts, like things that you're consuming right now in this period, both from a entertainment standpoint, but also from an educational standpoint?
Well, there aren't any rules anymore. No one knows what they're doing. Even a multi-billion-dollar corporation, I'm not going to name names, but multi-billion-dollar media corporations are doing their multi-million-dollar productions looking like this. I mean, people are I'll give you an example. So there's a show on a cable network that I like watching, and it's a pretty famous host. And as long as I've watched the show for many, many years, the host is wearing we call it a lav mic or a clip-on mic, and it's not tucked under his tie, just the cable drags down his tie. And I just think that's so unclean, and it just looks so unprofessional. And but now they're recording in his home, and he's wearing a lav mic.
Right.
But that's not what's being used as a microphone. It's just his computer.
So the lav mic's just a prop.
At best. And it just makes me laugh. Like, it sounds awful, but I mean, Zoom doesn't have a great audio component, and most computers don't have a great audio component. It makes me laugh each time. What am I seeing? I think people are realizing you don't need a $50,000 camera to get your point across. You don't need the most expensive thing. Something like this, which is fairly cheap to use, gets across the same point. You know, you shot your third episode, I think, the first week of March.
That sounds about right, yeah.
And I said to you, things are changing. We don't know if we're going to be shooting in the studio. Let's reassess in a month. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good to we started with three episodes, and you gained you started some momentum. And if we had stopped production on your show at that point and picked it up again in 6 months, you may have lost interest. Rebecca definitely would have lost interest. and I think it...
He's so holding on right now.
I can tell. So I think this allows you to continue this momentum. And honestly, one small constructive piece of criticism is I don't think you need to keep calling it an experimental podcast. I think
it's been past that phase.
Yeah, I think we're past that phase.
All right. Do you think that are people given a pass on production value? Like you mentioned the lav mic and, you know, backgrounds, and you got late night talk show hosts that are, you know, in their basements, and newscasters that are standing in front of bookshelves in their study, or
oh, that's what I forgot to get, a bookshelf to make me.
Yeah, I'm looking for a book. I have a bookshelf over there on my other side of my room here, but I can't move it behind me yet.
David, you don't need books. You're wicked smart already.
But do you think production value, like the longer we do this, will get better, or it'll stay the same? Or
I think at this point, people are willing to look past production value. Mm-hmm. Because we're all in this, and we all understand what each other is going through. So if Walter Cronkite is sitting in his easy chair, it's okay for this amount of time. It's okay.
Here's something I really don't understand. I don't watch TV that often, but I turned on the news the other day because, you know, like things were going down. And the weather report came on, and it pans to somebody who's sitting in her house. You could see the background, and then she's got a TV with the weather on it. Don't the weather people stand in front of a green screen anyway?
Yeah.
Like, why are they not using the green screens?
Well, because the green screen is probably in the studio, and the staff's probably not allowed in the studio.
Couldn't you use like the Zoom virtual background?
No, it does. It's not that good.
I've been bothered by this for like 2 weeks.
If you turned on your virtual background right now, your eyes would probably wash out. My shirt would definitely wash out. It's not going to be perfect. The TV, I don't know the exact one you were talking about, but I have seen it where they sit next to a TV monitor. They're doing the best they can, I think. They're just trying to figure out a way to deliver the same information, but in ways they never had to think about before.
How are they doing that in terms of the projection of what's on that screen, on the weather screen?
Any TV, any flat screen TV can be a computer monitor. So you just plug in a laptop or a computer into a TV and it becomes a computer monitor.
That's so it's simple. Doing using a direct feed then, and they're just controlling it there.
Or it's just a PowerPoint slide that she made and just has it on her screen. Yeah, it's actually a lot simpler than you might think.
Rebecca, what are some of the things that you're consuming right now other than TV weather?
Well, I've been listening to this podcast that I told you about. So it's the New York Times put out this podcast called Rabbit Hole, which I recommend that everybody listen to. Have you heard this, David?
No, but I know where I can only guess where it's going.
Oh, it's super interesting. So it follows, and I haven't listened to the whole thing, but I've listened to most of it. But basically it starts at kind of like the beginning of how we all got so bifurcated, and it goes through, somebody who gets addicted to the internet and is watching a ton of YouTube videos and then kind of stops watching television, which seems to be, sort of, unless you're watching cable, but that used to be like a common ground of information getting. And it follows this person through getting sucked into the internet and YouTube videos, and then all of a sudden they release all of these new algorithms, which then give you more of the same thing that you've been watching. So it explains through this lens of people who are going down like the YouTube rabbit hole, how really the algorithms are feeding that bifurcation, and you're getting reinforced with what you already think is true. And you think that the only videos that are out there are, whatever information from whatever side you might be getting.
Right.
Super fascinating. And then it starts to get into, some of the current events of what's going on right now. Some of the deeper, darker areas of the internet. Mm. There's the QAnon theory. So, who's getting information from where, and how the internet has like, and the algorithms from social media has facilitated all of this, which is super fascinating and terrifying.
How long is it?
5 episodes, 6 episodes, something like that. Not very long, half hour each.
Nice. I'll check it out.
Yeah, good. Highly recommended.
What are they, about 30 minutes a piece or?
Yeah, but it really sets up, like, then you start to understand, what's going on right now with these protests and riots and how everything's getting so confused, because you have all these different entities and all these different groups that are getting information from different places. So they don't, they don't necessarily always cross-pollinate. So if you're watching, one set of YouTube videos, you don't know what the other person's watching in terms of YouTube videos. And there's, 4 different storylines that are happening right now. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard for, I think, anybody to really understand what the other person is thinking when you're standing on the street or having a conversation with somebody and you can't see eye to eye. It's because you don't know what kind of information they're getting.
So what kind of algorithm am I getting if all I watch on YouTube is hockey fights?
You're gonna probably get more sports brawls, right?
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's But that is kind of interesting, though. I mean, yeah, like if you – the rabbit hole is like an app name, right? Because, you know, the way the content is designed, you could just follow hockey fights, you know, back to the early days of the NHL or AHL or whatever kind of league that you're into, and you're stuck in that rabbit hole and might not know what's going on in another sports league, right, let alone what's happening out in the world, right?
Right, exactly.
I mean, it is kind of wild, like how the media is shaping, and I don't mean that in just the traditional sense, but the different, you know, like you're saying, anybody can be a poster of content apropos here, but like that there is so much choice out there, but we're not necessarily, like you're saying, Rebecca, able to access it.
Yeah, and there's no, how do you know what the universe of videos is? Like, there's no overall menu list when you go on to, you know, Google or YouTube or Facebook, any of it. So you can't just kind of search what the whole universe is. It's all being filtered to your particular profile of what they think that you've already liked before. And you're not getting all sides of what's happening. You're getting what they think you're going to want to hear.
Right.
Or necessarily able to kind of broaden your horizons in terms of other types of content, right?
Yeah. It's wild.
That's something. David, you touched upon another kind of near and dear topic to all of us here, sports. How are you managing? Are you a Korean baseball fan now, or into marble races? Where are you putting your sports energy?
This has been a hard couple of months for a lot of reasons, but it used to be the 3 days in July that was the baseball all-star break was the only 3 days in the entire year that there was no sports. And I can remember even last summer, like the morning after the all-star game, going, oh, another day without baseball. And now, I mean, the baseball season should have started 3.5 months ago, and it's for someone who grew up watching sports, staring at box scores, yeah, watching the Red Sox, the Bruins, the Celtics every single day. This has been tough. This has really been tough. I've been watching old sports DVDs.
Okay. Stuff that you had recorded or you know, things you had in your library.
Things I had, like, I don't know if, see, what happens, Grant, is when your team wins the championship, you get to...
I'm familiar with it.
I know, it's hard to imagine around these here parts, but so like watching the 2004 World Series DVD.
I was wondering if you were going to say VHS tape.
No, Rebecca, it wasn't that long ago. I've been watching. So ESPN Plus has a great library of sports documentaries and information. They just did the Chicago Bulls series, which was really good. They have a two-part thing on Lance Armstrong that I'm in the middle of right now. So it's not like I'm watching a game every day, but we got a kid, we got to entertain him. We got a dog that needs to run around. As much as I'd like to be watching sports, my much like anything else in life right now, attention is just shifted.
Right.
To something else. If there were a Red Sox game on tonight, yeah, I'd probably sit in this chair and turn on the TV and watch the Red Sox game. Instead, I'm probably going to run around the backyard with the kid and the dog. It's probably better as a father.
Yeah. But he could be watching the game with you. I mean, you could be working on that indoctrination.
He's missing out on so much.
Yeah.
The heartache of a baseball fan. Just totally, totally. He's going to be so deprived growing up.
You went there about the championships. What's your thoughts on Tom Brady moving to Tampa Bay?
Okay, so let me back. I will answer your question, but I have to back up a second. Okay, I grew up about 30 miles east of Foxboro, Massachusetts, where the Patriots play. And when I was a kid
in Plymouth, for our listener,
Plymouth, Massachusetts, America's hometown, the old 400th anniversary this year. There is no such thing as a diehard Patriots fan. When I was a kid, the Patriots were terrible. 1-15, 2-14. They were very rarely on TV because they never sold out games at home.
Oh, wow.
I got more Jets and Giants games as a kid than Patriots. I dated a girl a long time ago. Her dad was an original 1960 Boston Patriots season ticket holder. That guy was a diehard fan. So when Brady came, even when they went to the Super Bowl and got killed by the Bears, even when they went to the Super Bowl and got beat by the Packers, those were one and done years. People didn't care about them the year after. And so when Brady came around and they won the championship, I jumped on the bandwagon too. I absolutely did. The family, and this is going to anger a lot of people that I grew up with, and I'm totally okay with it. But the Kraft family made a lot of personnel decisions, signing players that I just didn't think needed to be on the team. They had checkered backgrounds, and they just made a lot of decisions that I didn't feel like as a father I could tell my son, yeah, I cheer for this team and this is the jerk that's playing for them. The Patriots were more I don't know the word, but they were more, it's almost like they were just daring people not to cheer for them after all those championships. So I don't cheer for the Patriots anymore. I just felt that they were making a lot of money decisions. They say they're a community-based organization and they care about their fans, and then they sign players that were in a lot of legal trouble for lots of different reasons. Well, anyway, so Brady signs with the Buccaneers. The Patriots had all these years to sign him to another deal. He has said he's wanted to play up until he was whatever age. He was a free agent. His contract expired. Good for him for getting another payday. Look, I work for the city of Pittsburgh. I am happy as can be in my job. But if Moon Township calls me and says, we're gonna give you the same job and double the salary, I'm asking, where do I sign?
Rebecca's an alumni.
Moon Township.
Oh, okay.
I won't say anything bad, but it's a different world.
Okay, so Plum Borough, is that better?
That's the other side of town.
So, but I think that as a sports fan, we very the athletes that play for the teams we cheer for, they have no connection to these towns. They are going to their job just like we go to our jobs.
Right.
And we get angry. We burn jerseys when our favorite player goes to another team. That makes no sense to me. Like, if our competitor does, do governments have competitors? But if our competitor,
township, yeah, sure.
My wife and I would be having a serious conversation. Look, I'd have double the salary. Like, I don't
they're
understand.
They're not going to pay you double the salary there, for sure.
I mean, it's a starting point in the negotiation, at least.
They might give you a new jersey, but, you know.
Yeah, okay. As long as I get to wear the same number, I guess that's all I know.
They'll let you keep your number, just a different jersey.
Okay, that's fine. But Brady going to, I mean, he's not going to win a Super Bowl there. This was a purely money-based decision, and good for him.
Yeah,
West. I mean, the family obviously needs the money.
West Coast of Florida, you know, it's nice. I mean,
yeah, perfect.
Not too bad for an aging, retiring football player.
Yeah, why not?
So you guys also touched on kind of dogs and family. I mean, how are you? You're both dog lovers. How are you spending time with your beloved Pooches?
Rebecca, you go ahead.
Oh, me go ahead. Well, my dog, he just sleeps all day. I don't know. Can you see him? There he is.
Oh, wow.
Introduce him to folks.
He's sleeping. He's 15. So he's pretty happy I'm home. I'm concerned that if I leave, though, he's going to tear the house up. But I saw something recently where they were talking about mediation or stress relief for pets for when people go back to work. Apparently that's like a serious issue. And it was some kind of advertisement for, I don't know, maybe you could put them on a webinar or something.
There's going to be like Zoom for dogs?
Yeah, calming effects for dogs. I mean, he sits here all the time and probably thinks there's a whole bunch of people in the house while I'm on Zoom meetings all day.
You know, there's actually one of the things, we got a dog back in January. And one of the things that my daughter found was this is all integrated in our conversation. There's a YouTube channel for dogs. And it's like what you're saying, it's calming music. You know, it's peaceful sounds like birds chirping and things like that, that apparently makes doggies feel good.
Nice.
So how about you with it's Potter. Is that right?
We have a year and a half old golden retriever named Potter. He is 90 pounds of drool.
Whoa.
He is the happiest being I have ever been near. Ready to play, ready to jump around. He has no idea how big or how strong he is. So he has knocked me over a couple of times. You can follow Potter on the Twitter machine, at PGH Potter.
There's our advertisement for today. We're at PGH Potter.
At PGH Potter.
Okay.
He is awesome. And we have a lot of fun with him. My son loves him. He loves my son. We have great pictures of my 55-ish pound son lying on my 90-ish pound dog. And not a problem at all. He's going to be very upset when I go back to the office on a regular basis because he's had a lot of fun sitting here in my home office with me.
Yeah, they're all going to
have. Start like a Zoom channel support group for dogs, city dogs.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
That might be a whole new show.
Yeah, the first couple of days, I'm sure my wife will have to call me on FaceTime while I'm at work, just so he can hear my voice.
That's awesome. Well, it looks like we're up against time here. David, I want to thank you. Rebecca, thank you too. We appreciate the work that the cable team does, not just in producing kind of the Grant Street experience, but just the heroic work that you guys have done in creating access for people and the connection to their local government is an important part of our democracy. And thank you for the work that you guys do.
Well, thank you for having me. This is great. And I'm really excited to see how this production moves forward. The conversations you've had already have been really timely and interesting. And I'm very excited to see you move forward.
Awesome. We couldn't do it without you guys and the team. We appreciate that. And, we'll have some next, our next guests are going to be just as exciting. So stick with us on the Grant Street experience. Thank you, David Finer, Rebecca Kiernan. Thanks to you guys for being with us today. I'm Grant Irvin. I'm your host here on the Grant Street experience. Thank you so much for listening in, and we'll check you out soon. Have a great day.